Awesome, lovely. Okay. Oh. You ready to go?
Yep.
Awesome, let's do it. Okay, so joining me on the podcast today is a very special guest, one and only Ben Griffins. Now, man, the reason why I brought you on this podcast today is because I've been working as a PT now for just over 7 months. So when I started working as a PT, I obviously went to social media and then I was looking for a bunch of PTs that I could follow, can get good information from, because nowadays in the age of information, there's so much out there. It's very hard to pick and choose what's actually going to be beneficial. And then your Instagram came up. And then I've just got to start by saying, man, like, you have a very vast knowledge of what it means to be a strength and conditioning coach, not only just for athletes, but also for everyday gym goers. So I got to start with, like, where do you get all this information from?
Well, first of all, thank you for that introduction. It's very flattering. I guess the foundation of all the knowledge that I have kind of goes back to my education and qualifications, that sort of stuff. So I guess it started at uni. So I actually studied, so I did an undergraduate degree. It was called coaching science at the time. It's now the same as your exercise science degree these days. And then I actually did a master's in exercise science, in clinical exercise physiology. So I actually worked as an exercise physiologist before I then transitioned over to strength and conditioning. So I'd say that's where the foundation of my knowledge comes from. But then I also, when I transitioned over to S&C, I was just kind of became obsessed with learning as much as I possibly could. And I became obsessed with trying to learn off coaches who were doing what I wanted to do. So I literally just consumed everything I could from coaches who I respected and kind of looked up to. And then it was just something that just consumed me. I just became obsessed is pretty much the best way to put it. And that was kind of how I learned. That was pretty much how I learned everything. I think a lot of it was actually self-taught, self-learnt from just learning off other people and, like I said, consuming any resources that I could. I also did a 3-month internship over in America as well with a conditioning team, which was invaluable as well.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about this internship. What did they have you doing?
So I was working with a Division I football team over there.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much just coaching. So in terms of theory wise, so theoretically, I didn't really learn anything I didn't already know when I went over there. But in terms of coaching, like, they just threw us straight on the floor and they were like, there's the athletes, start coaching them. And you pretty much had to start coaching from day one. So it was kind of like sink or swim, really. I learned so much about coaching when I was over there.
Awesome. Good on you, man. So what made you start getting into this business of strength and conditioning? Was it like a lifelong passion for you, or is it something you learned down the track?
Pretty much. I grew up just loving sport, really. I was never the greatest athlete ever. So I kind of realized that by training, by getting fitter and getting stronger, I could kind of close the gap on guys who were sort of probably more naturally skilled and just better than me, really. And then that just kind of, my love of training just kind of grew from there. I just started training and then eventually just became obsessed with it and sort of started to love the training side of it. Just grew from there.
Awesome. So what was your background then in terms of training?
In terms of sport?
Yeah.
So I grew up playing rugby league and touch football, and it just kind of spawned from there. So then I just started kind of doing strength training and stuff on the side of footy at first. And then, yeah, like I said, it really just took off from there.
Awesome. And so how long have you been in the fitness industry for then?
So I graduated uni in 2013, far out, ages ago now. So pretty much since then, pretty much since I graduated, I kind of worked, I've been in the health / fitness industry since then.
Mm-hmm. So what is that? 7-8 years, would you say then, perhaps?
Yeah, I'd probably say seven and a bit. Yeah.
7 years. So that's quite some time. Now the PT business is, the strength condition business is very, very competitive. And there's, there's a lot of players in the game. There's always a lot of there's always information and everyone's trying to one up each other. What advice can you give to someone who's literally just starting out as a strength coach or just starting out as a PT?
Patience is probably the biggest thing. You have to be really patient with it and get experience. Coach anyone you can. Coaching is something you can only really get better at by actually coaching. You read as many books as you want, but there's such a human element to it. So, like, you have to be able to work with people. It's one thing to be able to read a book and say, this is how you get someone stronger. But if you can't connect and work with people, it's all kind of useless. So I'd say be patient, particularly if you're starting as a PT. You might not be able to go full-time as a PT initially, which isn't a bad thing. So you might have to have another job to make money and sort of pay the bills. And then you might have to do the PT thing on the side while you build it up, which is fine. I think that's actually not a bad way to do it. So that's what I mean by patience. So if it's something you want to do long-term, you might have to spend, well, who knows, like 3, 4, 5 years building it up to the point where you can actually do it full-time. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not that long a time if this is something you want to do for 30 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. So patience is probably the number one thing.
Patience. And now are you speaking from experience? Was this the case for you when you first started? Did you have to work another job on the side, or would you like 100% dive into the deep end?
So what I did was, so I was working as an exercise physiologist, and then I decided I wanted to transition into strength and conditioning. So what I did was, first of all, I went over to the States and did this internship. Then when I came back, I managed to pick up some work as a coach, essentially as a PT / strength and conditioning coach. The title's a little bit interchangeable in the private sector. So I started doing that strength and conditioning work on the side of my EP job. So I kept doing the EP job. Then I just started coaching in a gym kind of couple afternoons a week. And then I literally just slowly built it up from there. So I had some massive days as it started to build up. So I was like getting up early in the morning, training myself, and I go to my other job all day. Then I go and coach all afternoon. And that was pretty much how it went until I slowly started to build it up. It took me about 2 years, maybe a little bit less than that. Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah, I was pretty lucky. It happened pretty quickly for me. I just kind of managed to pick up a manager role at the gym I'm at now, so at Real Fit Strength and Conditioning. So I kind of was able to move into that role quite quickly, but it still took at least a year for me to be able to build up, I think.
Good on you, man. So now that, because you've been in the fitness industry for so long and you've been doing it for quite some time and built up a reputation, what critiques do you have of the fitness industry, or is there anything in particular you would like to change about the industry?
I'd love the industry to become a more viable option for coaches in terms of a long-term career. I think that's the, I don't know how that changes, but I think that's the big down point of the industry. It's the way it is at the moment. Most coaches are having to work really long hours and they're not getting paid very much. And most coaches aren't on a salary or full time. So I think that, and then eventually most people just end up leaving because it's just not a viable long-term option. So in terms of the industry as a whole, it's something I'd love to be able to, like I said, I don't exactly know how that happens. In the gym I work at, we're trying to create pathways for coaches to come into and build up to kind of full-time, hopefully eventually salaried roles. But that's one thing I'd love to see change and develop in the industry.
That's good. That's a valid point. There's definitely, I would say from my experience of talking to people, over here in WA, we have WACE, which is WA Institute of Sport. And there's a lot of coaches that I've come in contact with. What you've just said is definitely something that I've heard before, is there's not a lot of money involved in coaching. Well, one, because how there's a little bit of a stigma that comes around sports coaching, that it's the people who are then teaching them the skills that are the ones that are treated with a little bit more respect and earn more. But really, it's also the strength coaches behind the scenes that are doing, you know, long hours, waking up first thing in the morning and then like attending to the needs and then having to adjust. That's definitely a point that I've heard before. Now, let's talk about the training. So one thing I actually respect a lot about you is that the stuff you put out on Instagram is insanely good. I think I've, since I've started, been following you as much as I can. Now, there's definitely a few posts that you put out that I really wanted to talk about because I feel like it's very critical to our listeners. So I'm just going to pull up a couple of Instagram posts from you. So this one was from, don't have the exact date, but you stated common reactions I get from athletes who are new to structured strength conditioning when they first see programs are written for them is that's fewer exercises than I usually do. That's more rest than I usually take. Quality over quantity. Now, what made you want to write that, or what's your argument behind that?
It's just something I see so often. When it comes to strength training, most athletes, or most people in general, really, who've been in a gym, they tend to associate training, and particularly strength training, with kind of just getting in there and just flogging the crap out of themselves, to be honest. Having no rest, just doing as much as they possibly can. And yeah, as opposed to what I'm kind of talking about there, the first time they get introduced to more structured strength training where the idea is to actually build strength, the reaction is kind of almost always, oh, this is a lot less exercises. When they first look at the program, they'll generally be like, oh, it might be five or six exercises. Their reaction will always be, oh, will this take an hour? And you almost have to be like, yeah, just trust me. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to slow things down a bit. We're going to focus on your movement quality. We're going to focus on progressively building the load week to week. And as you get stronger, you're going to need to rest. If you don't rest between sets, that's going to start to limit the amount of weight you can lift. So rest becomes a limiting factor if you don't allow enough time to rest between sets. So yeah, it's just something I see all the time. People kind of being like, oh, this is way less than I usually do, and this is way more rest than I normally have.
Good point. Good valid point. So have you ever had a case where you've had an athlete that's come to you and you sort of had to like rewrite all or clear a lot of what they know?
I generally, the way I do things is I kind of like to always take things back to basics. Mm-hmm. So regardless of how far along someone is, I kind of always like to take them back to the start and have a look at how they move on your basic movements. And then we'll kind of progress from there. If there's someone who's trained before and has quite an extensive training background, they'll progress quite quickly. As where if it's someone who is more inexperienced, they're just going to take longer to progress. That's all. But either way, I'll generally, regardless of the person, I'll generally take them back to basics and pull it all back and then go from there anyway.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, can you give me some more clarification of what you mean by like basic movements? Like what are you specifically assessing?
So we'll be looking at things like, can they squat? Can they hinge? Can they bridge? Can they do a lunge? And then your upper body basic things will be like push-ups, rows, chin-ups. Can they do all these sorts of things? And then once you work at where they are on the spectrum of those exercises, then it kind of gives you a starting point. And then obviously there's also other things like breathing and bracing, the way they use their core, their glutes, all these types of things. And it obviously gets kind of individualized as well. There'll be different little individual tests depending on the person's background, injury history, training history, all that sort of stuff.
Fair enough. Now, how do you personally like to split your sessions when it comes to your athletes or your clients?
Really depends how many sessions per week they're doing. So generally, if it's three or less, generally they'll be all whole body sessions.
Okay.
So where we do a mix of upper and lower body. Sometimes if they're doing three sessions per week, if they're going to do two sessions back to back, we might do an upper lower, and then the other session might be a whole body. And then once we go to four sessions per week, that's when we'll go to an upper and lower body split. And I'll generally do the two lower, two upper body sessions. But yeah, that's pretty much the basic rundown of how I'd split the sessions.
Mm-hmm. So let's say if you're doing three full body sessions a week, how would you normally like split that up for the training day specifically? Do you usually start to upper body first or lower body first, or how do you structure it?
Generally, how it would work is I'll always pair a upper body and lower body exercise together.
Okay.
Just because it's time efficient. Obviously, it means if they do a lower body exercise, then while they're doing the upper body exercise, they're essentially getting rest. Their lower body is essentially resting while they do the upper body exercise. So then they can kind of jump off that upper body exercise and they don't need quite as long rest before they can go back into the lower body exercise. So generally I'll pair upper body and lower body exercises throughout the session.
Very nice. Very nice. And what's so on to the next point is, have you ever worked with athletes that involve, was it coaching them in terms of bringing up their speed?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say that's kind of a major focus for a lot of athletes here. A lot of athletes that I've worked with.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk like speed in general. What are some of the key principles that you believe that is important to coach your athletes on?
I guess in terms of, first of all, it's a little bit about knowing your limitations as well. So
yeah.
I'm not a track coach, so I know the basics of sprint techniques. So I know how to coach basic acceleration technique and basic max speed running technique. So in terms of like actually doing sprint stuff with them, the stuff that I go through in terms of specific sprint stuff is very basic. But the first thing to remember when it comes to developing speed is that the most important exercise to do if you want to get faster is actually get out and sprint. Okay. So that's the most important thing. So if you want to get faster, you need to be sprinting regularly. So that is kind of the number one thing. Then second to that is building strength. So the stronger you are, the more force you can apply into the ground, the further you can propel yourself forward, the faster you can run. So essentially, number one thing I would say, need to be sprinting regularly. Number two thing is increase lower body strength, build a solid foundation of strength.
When you talk about sprinting regularly, like how many sessions would you say that's per week?
Well, it depends on the individual.
Okay.
For most athletes, two is plenty.
Two?
Particularly when you take into account all the other training they do. Mm-hmm. So if they can get two sessions in, and they don't even have to be full speed sessions either. Say if they're doing any sort of field session, they can just jump out on the field for 10 to 15 minutes beforehand and get a couple of sprints in there. And that's really all it needs to be for most athletes.
Mm-hmm. And have you, I know that you said that you did your rugby league and your touch football. Did you ever have any history with track and field? Perhaps maybe back in high school or back in university?
Nah, it's something I kind of wish I did. And it's still something I actually do want to do is kind of at least go down and shadow a few track sessions with track and just try and learn as much as I can off track coaches. But no, personally, I've never really had much involvement with track and field.
Okay. So what are some of the most, let's say, important things that you've learned when it comes to coaching sprinting?
Less is more. So in terms of if you're actually doing a speed session with someone, you don't want to over-cue them. So sprinting is a very neurally demanding activity, which means if the athlete overthinks it, they're probably going to run slower. Because there's so many moving parts, you actually want them thinking less. So it's really important to focus on one thing at a time. So say if you're going to cue them on their arms, just do that. Just tell them to think about their arms. Because then if you start saying, oh, think about your arms, think about your knee drive, think about having your toe up, then they go to run and you'll watch their face and they're just kind of like, it just kind of goes in slow-mo. So it's got to be one thing at a time.
Okay, very nice. And is there any, now in terms of coaching sprinters, are there any exercises that you don't recommend or anything that you believe that goes against the grain?
No, once again, it all kind of comes back to the individual. It's hard to specifically name any exercises that I'd recommend someone doesn't do, because I think that kind of really depends on the individual. But I think the main thing is just to keep it same as anything, just to keep it simple and focus on really developing. If an athlete's new to the gym particularly, just focus on generally. There's nothing specific you need to do. Just focus on generally building a solid foundation of lower body strength.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what's the other thing in terms of personal training for yourself, is there any specific like split that you follow for yourself, or what's your typical training week like?
So what I will do is, so generally I do four strength training sessions a week. So I'll do two lower body sessions, two upper body sessions. Then I do two field sessions on top of that as well, where I do a little bit of sprint training and conditioning out on the field as well.
Okay. And when do, what is it, your own sprint training, do you find that actually doing the work as well on the track has actually benefited you, or is it something that, or you want to, are you a case where you learn something, test it yourself, then you apply it to your athletes?
Yeah, definitely. So that really applies to everything, whether it be any sort of speed drills or strength training. Yeah, generally, if I see something, I'm going to try it for myself first so that I understand it, so I know what it feels like. So when you're telling someone what to do, you can relate to how they're feeling and what they're going through when they're trying to figure it out. So definitely, yeah.
Okay, so for this next question, I'm just going to bring you back to one of your previous Instagram posts, where you stated, in Australia, there's still a stigma around children and strength training. If they're well coached, strength training is fine for younger athletes. In fact, it's good for them. We're holding athletes back by not letting them start strength training until they're like 18. Why do you believe that is the case?
Why do I believe there is a stigma?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I honestly don't even really know. I think it's got to do with a few studies that came out back in the day that kind of linked growth defects to strength training. Mm-hmm. But all of that has since been disproven. Okay. But there's still a weird stigma that kind of surrounds children and strength training.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of children and strength training, do you believe there should be an age on when they can or cannot start?
Oh, I think it mainly comes down to common sense, really. I don't think they really can be too young. Obviously, kind of below like 10, 11, 12, they're not going to be interested anyway. So I think good luck trying to get 10-year-olds or anything to do anything worthwhile in a gym. They're just going to have other things they want to be off doing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just really depends on the individual as well. Once they kind of mature to a certain age, and just if you have a good coach too, like when you have a 12-year-old in the gym, you're not going to train them the same way you would an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. Because their mind just works too differently is the main thing. Before it becomes a physical thing, it's just you almost have to entertain them a bit because they're not there to like, you're not going to have serious conversations with them or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, because overseas, I know in America, they get, they'll start athletes in the gym at quite a young age, around that sort of 12, 13, 14. They don't kind of hesitate to do that. Whereas in Australia, we kind of tend to wait until athletes are kind of 16, 17, 18. And the problem with that is, regardless of when you start strength training, your first year of strength training is always your first year of strength training. So mm-hmm. regardless of how old you are, you're still going to have to go through that first year of learning to move and building a solid foundation. So the sooner you can get that first year out of the way, almost the better.
Mm, good, good. And when it came to building strength in terms of like a foundation, let's say if someone came to you and they wanted to build strength and all that, and they had never done strength training before, what is your way of building them up to that squat, or what's your way of building up to a bench or a deadlift? Do you follow like a step-by-step process? Personally, for myself, if I was to teach someone the squat, start with body weight, obviously, and then check out how they move, check out their anatomy. And then let's say, for example, if they have some weakness, either in a quad or a glute or a hamstring, think about building up that strength. Then from there, start to add a little bit more weight to it. So there's a simple way I could put it is from body weight to squatting with a kettlebell to squatting front squat with a barbell, then finally to squatting in a back squat with a barbell. Is there a certain formula or a way that you follow?
Yeah, very similar. Definitely have progressions and regressions for every exercise. And like you said, if you identify specific things that need to be worked on with the individual, obviously you're going to work on those in the background. But in terms of, say, using the squat example, I'll start very similar to you. So I like to start with a body weight box squat generally. And we'll even break it down further than that. And we might start with a bottoms up squat. So where they literally sit on the box, we practice getting them in position while they're sitting on the box. And all I have to do is stand up. Mm-hmm. Then once they can kind of feel that bottom position, then we'll start doing top down. So then we'll start standing up and they have to control down to the box and then stand up. And then we just progress from there. Then we take away the box. Or we start going to a kettlebell box squat or goblet box squat, whatever you want to call it. And then progress from there, like you said. Then we might progress on to a barbell from there once they kind of master the kettlebells. But it's like you said, it's just about having progressions and regressions for exercises.
Mm-hmm. And the next question would be, let's talk about, let's say, things like the deadlift. With the deadlift, it's a bit of a, let's say, controversial exercise because there's been coaches that have argued for or coaches that have been argued against. You know, we've had the famous Robert Hurst interview with Joe Rogan quite some time ago where he talked about the deadlift. If you're looking for, if you're someone who wants to deadlift for the sake of deadlifting, then it's not really necessarily worth it, unless you're someone who's actually deadlifting to actually because they want to have like a stronger deadlift, let's say, for like a powerlifter. What's your take on the whole issue?
Personally, I don't have any problem with deadlifts, so I think they're a great exercise. I don't use straight bar deadlifts with, in saying that though, I tend to not use straight bar deadlifts with a lot of people, particularly athletes. Okay. I think there are other alternatives. I'm a big fan of the trap bar. Like, I love the trap bar. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bit easier to coach, and it's just the position it puts the athletes in is a little bit friendlier on their back. But in saying that, I don't have a problem with straight bar deadlifts. I think the biggest problem people run into is they rush into them too quickly, mm-hmm. and they don't spend enough time dialing in their technique. So for mine, I just think it's a time thing. If someone spends enough time in the gym and keeps training, eventually we'll progress onto a barbell deadlift. But it's not something we're going to start with. We're not going to come in, we're not going to start deadlifting straight away. It might be a few years before we go on to like a barbell deadlift. We'll get the most out of everything else we can. And it's almost just like you're kind of just ticking things off. So we'll work through a bunch of other exercises. We might trap bar for ages and ages and ages till we kind of get to a point where, yeah, you're really strong now on that. So we might try to start deadlifting with a barbell just because why not, almost, if you've been training for that long. It's just another box to tick off. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of take that approach where you have already built a solid foundation of strength, when they go to do a deadlift, their back's already strong, their glutes are already strong, their core's already strong. So you've already built this stuff up, as opposed to someone coming in the gym and deadlifting from day one where they don't have any of that stuff. So I think deadlifts are fine. It's just got to be, you've just got to build into them. I think building a foundation of strength prior to starting barbell deadlifts is useful. And then also technique. People just got to spend more time working on their technique as opposed to just loading up the bar with weights.
Mm-hmm. Now, in turn, let's actually talk about the trap bar, because for me personally, I do agree with you a lot on why I believe it's a very superior bar, or it's an essential tool in building a solid strength foundation. Just for the people listening, give us your arguments to why you believe the trap bar is so beneficial.
I would say, I honestly wouldn't say the trap bar is superior to a barbell deadlift. I just think it's a variation. So I kind of look at it that way. It's just a variation. Mm-hmm. I just like the position that it puts athletes in, allowing them to kind of squat down into the movement a little bit more, and having the weight in line with their center of mass means it just takes a little bit of pressure off their back. And I find athletes are able to just get into a better position inside the bar as opposed to having it in front of them. And just through experience, you just find that I've just found that it's far easier to coach.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Lovely. And so in terms of like exercises, we're talking a little bit more about, we talk about deadlifts, talk about speeds, talk about squats. Are there any exercises at all in particular that you're not a fan of or that you don't recommend? For me personally, I've always had an issue with the concept of dumbbell flies. Reason why is because I'm a firm believer that one of my key rules is I always like to be the weight heaviest where the muscle is the strongest. Now, for an example, so in a dumbbell flies, when the weight is actually in reverse, when at the bottom half, the weight's actually heaviest and your muscle's actually physically the weakest because of the lever length. And that's just a firm belief. Is there anything in particular of any exercises that you're not a fan of?
Off the top of my head, there's no sort of sing, there's no kind of specific exercises that I would single. I'm sure I could find some if I had thought about it, but for me, it's more about the individual. So as long as you can kind of explain why you're using that exercise for that specific person, then I think it's fine, because I've seen programs before, from looking from the outside, looking in for people, I've seen people do exercises that I'm like, oh, I don't really like that exercise. Mm-hmm. But then I've talked to the coach and the coach has explained, no, this is why this person's doing this exercise because of whatever reason. And then you sit there and go, oh, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So I think there are, like, there are a few exercises which are just stupid. Obviously you see some things and you're like, there's no explanation for that. But one thing I've learned is not to be too quick to judge on exercises, because unless you can get the full context and actually talk to the person who's programmed that exercise, I think it's risky to, just automatically assume that it's a stupid exercise.
Can you give us a example of when you looked at that exercise and say, oh, and then you went to the coach and they explained it for you?
I don't think I can actually, I'm drawing blanks. I don't think I can actually think of any off the top of my head.
No, that's okay. That's fine. Moving on. So just as we're coming just near to the end, what is one thing that drives you as a PT, sorry, as a strength coach?
I just love it, to be honest. Like, there was something about coaching that as soon as I kind of started doing it, I was like, yeah, this is what I want to be doing. And it's one of those, it's almost an innate thing. Like, I can't even really explain it, to be honest. And I think that shows through in the social media stuff that I do, because I basically just post the stuff I'm thinking about. And because I just kind of just love it so much, I'm just kind of thinking about it all the time. So It's just kind of stuff that's always on my mind and I'm always thinking about it. But yeah, I think it's just almost innate. I just really, as corny as it sounds, growing up, I kind of never had a strength and conditioning coach to kind of help me and guide me. So I look back at my training and like, it was just stupid. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. So now I kind of really want to be the person that can fill that void for other people and kind of give them what I never got, essentially.
Okay. And what are some of the goals that you set yourself to in terms as a strength coach over this year?
One of the goals I had was, so I have just recently started on a salary. So that was kind of one of the goals we had for me within the business that I work for, to build towards that. Mm-hmm. And that's happened. And in terms of just general stuff though, it's more just to keep building, just keep building up what we've kind of built. A lot of it's kind of focused around the business I work for as well. Just keep building up all of my stuff and just generally keep building up the business as well.
Very nice. And in terms of building up the business, are you looking to branch out, or are you looking to hire more get more clients on board, or like what's your definition of building a business?
So it kind of comes back a little bit to what we spoke about before. Mm-hmm. So the coaching, the trying to create more jobs for coaches is definitely something we kind of aspire to down the track. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to create stable jobs for coaches. So, and progressions for coaches to be able to come in and build up and work in coaching for a long time, hopefully for their life. So that's definitely something that's in our goals. It's something we aspire to definitely do. And then, but that happens by building up the actual business itself, finding more sustainable ways to, because the thing about coaching and stuff is a lot of people don't like to talk about money, but at the end of the day, you have to be making money to be able to keep doing what you want to do and live your life, basically. So the harsh reality is part of it is about finding ways to increase revenue without, in a fashion that's not just flogging coaches to death. So it's about building better systems and creating better systems to increase revenue, really, that doesn't just rely on coaches putting in hours and hours and hours and hours of one-on-one sessions in.
That's a valid point. When you said why do people don't really like to talk about money, why do you believe that is the case?
I honestly have no idea. It's just a weird thing within strength and conditioning and with coaches. Like, coaches tend to have this weird, particularly S&C coaches tend to have this weird attitude of, I'm in it because I love it. I don't do it for the money. And I grind so hard and I work so hard and I do this and that. And that's cool. Like, I'm not bagging that out, but that attitude kind of gets taken a little bit too far, I think. And then any coach who comes out and talks about money, everyone kind of says, oh, you're in it for the wrong reasons and stuff. But it's, and don't get me wrong, you can take that too far as well. If you're just solely focused on money, obviously that's taken that too far. But yeah, it's just a weird thing. Coaches just don't like to talk about money, but I think it has to be talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that a lot of coaches do really need to get past those barriers because at the end of the day, I mean, we don't want to really be too much attached to money in terms of like from a financial standpoint, but at the end of the day, bills are going to be paid, you know, mouths have to be fed. And if they're spending all that time, I believe there must be some form of like balance for them. So moving on, just to wrap this up. Now, if you could go back in time to when you first started working in strength conditioning, what are some of the things that you wish you'd learned earlier? Also, what are some of the things you wish you know, that you know now, which you wish you had learned back then?
Probably most of it centers around communication and understanding, kind of like how I spoke about earlier, understanding how much of it is a people game. Because that's what it is. Coaching is communication and it's a people game. It's far less about sets and reps and exercise selection than it is about communication and being able to talk and bond and build relationships with people. So I think I was a little naive to that aspect when I first started. I think that was something that definitely took me by surprise because you have quite a bit of spare time in a session usually. So you have to actually be able to talk to people and you have to have a decent level of communication skills, which when I first started, I definitely think I lacked in that area and it's taken me time to get better at that. But yeah, that's definitely something I would like to have been pre-warned about, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And is there anybody, before we wrap this up, is there anyone you want to thank, any shout-outs you want to mention or give?
Not particularly, no. If anyone is interested, the gym I work for is called Real Fit Strength and Conditioning in Canberra, if you're interested in checking us out. But no, other than that, just a massive thank you to you. It's been some of the things you said have been extremely flattering and I'm pretty humbled to hear you say some of that stuff. And I'm just glad you've enjoyed the content that I've put out and you've found it useful.
Mm-hmm. No problem, man. I appreciate your time. Now, just before I just let you go, I'm just going to quit and just recording. Thank you very much, Ben.